Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
The people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Don't buy anything based solely on tip or recommendation you hear. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 638. It's the 15th of November, 2016. On the podcast today, I have Tony Minini, CEO of Asia Met Resources, ticker ARS. And Tony talks about their update on the resource evaluation drilling being undertaken as part of the feasibility studies on the BKM project in Indonesia. Plus, I talked to full-time investor Wheelie Dealer, talking about the following stocks: 32 Red, Esure, McCarthy & Stone, Devro, Galliford Try, Moss Bros, B&M European Value, and IG Group. I also have today's suggested one for your watch list. It is Sirica Energy, SQZ, submitted by Ricky. Thanks for that, Ricky. And, as always, I've got the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets website this morning.
The Vox Markets podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is CEO of Asia Met Resources, Tony Minini. Tony, thank you for coming on.
Good to be here, Justin, as always.
Exactly. Well, listen, I know about Asia Met, and a lot of people do. You are one of the most followed companies on the Vox Markets website. But for anyone tuning in right now, new to the podcast, or haven't heard of Asia Met, what are you about there, Tony?
Asia Met is a development copper development company. We're dual AIM-TSX listed. We have two projects, both in Indonesia. One's a medium scale, 25,000 tonne per annum heap leach solvent extraction electro-winning copper development project, currently halfway through feasibility study. Sitting behind that is a very large deposit called Butong. Butong has had a scoping level study completed on it and is a very large option in respect of a copper development to come behind the BKM project, which is the medium scale project in feasibility I referred to. So copper, Indonesia development, big growth pipeline, coupled together with a team that's really done all this before. We've been involved in building a number of mines over the years. We've taken many projects from exploration through the studies phase into development and operations. So very experienced team we've put together, working on the feasibility now, looking to deliver that end of Q3 next year, and then fund the project, push it straight into development, looking to catch really the uptick in the copper cycle, which we believe is coming, very confident is coming, and we intend to be in production when that inevitable turn in the market happens, Justin.
Yeah, well, you know, copper has seen a strong rally of late, and we'll talk about that in a bit. But I just want to talk about the feasibilities that you mentioned there. You're sort of halfway through this. And I think for people who don't understand a feasibility study, most, you know, I suppose you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but, you know, most companies, institutions do not invest, do they, unless there's a feasibility study in place. So what I'm suggesting here is that for people investing here, it's almost a chance to get in here at early stages, isn't it, before the bigger money comes in. Is that the kind of thing, the case, really?
Oh, absolutely spot on, Justin. And you know, history repeats itself time and time again in this space. So you're dead right. Generally, the funds, the institutional money, looks to get involved in projects like ours, you know, with good teams, good projects. And typically, they recognise them around about this particular time in the cycle, sort of around the halfway through the feasibility mark. But inevitably, they will always wait for the delivery of the feasibility study before they press the trigger. So for, you know, your smart retail investors, your smart high net worth investors, you know, they've been in the company early. They're coming into the company now. They're building positions really ahead of that move. The feasibility study is always considered by institutional investors, financiers, to be a major sort of de-risking event in respect of a project. So, you know, they will always wait until all the T's are crossed and all the I's are dotted before they move. So, you know, that's, as you say, creates a great opportunity for retail investors, the smart, you know, high net worth investors who like to sort of get in ahead of that inevitable institutional investment.
Yeah, and if, you know, for an investor now, for people who are not au fait, and I'm not so much of, you know, copper grades and what to look out for, just to simplify it. I mean, as far as it's going at the moment, you did an update on the drilling today, but you've done this kind of thing before. How is this project looking, you know, in comparison to other projects at this stage that you've worked on? What's it looking like?
Oh, look, the project's looking terrific, Justin. You know, it's... I have a sort of a saying, you know, I've been involved in a lot of projects over a long period of time, and, you know, those that inevitably are not going to work continue to disappoint you each time. Each piece of work, you know, there's some level of disappointment. The exact opposite happens with good projects in that you get surprises on the upside each time. And I can say that the BKM project that we're working on, you know, is continues, and I've said this in the releases, and, you know, I mean what I say, it continues to meet or exceed, you know, our high expectations. So, you know, for example, the release that came out today, you know, is a case in point. You know, you drill out a deposit for an inferred resource is drilled at, you know, 100 by 100 metre spacing or 100 by 50 metre spacing in terms of the drill holes. So every 100 metres or every 50 metre holes or 100 metre lines. But, you know, that there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of space in between those holes for things to go wrong. And inevitably, if you ask a resource geologist, you know, what level of confidence do you have in an inferred study, you know, they'll say probably plus or minus 50%. So, you know, that's a very large swing if it goes against you. In fact, it can be a, you know, project-destroying sort of downside move. Here at BKM, every single hole that we've drilled has been very predictable in that we're getting the same grades, better grades and thicknesses of mineralisation across the entire deposit. So when I say good continuity, I mean from hole to hole, from section to section, every hole we drill meets our expectations or exceeds our expectations. So that's, you know, you can imagine if you're coming in to mine a deposit, you need to know that it's continuous. You don't want to be mining waste when you think it's ore and vice versa. So that continuity is very important. We're getting excellent continuity here at BKM. We're getting excellent continuity of grade, thickness, the same mineralogy, so not changes in the mineralogy. So from a processing perspective, we've got consistency. And we're finding that the mineralization, you know, is always sort of closer to surface than we originally anticipate. So being closer to surface, obviously you don't have to dig as deep to get to the ore. You don't have to, again, move as much waste versus the ore. So, you know, BKM stacks up very well in really the fundamental attributes, and that was the terminology that I used in the release today. It's shallow, it's got very good continuity across all the different characteristics of the deposit. And, you know, everything that we have done to date has met or exceeded our expectations. So, you know, it's, you know, that's why we're very excited by the project. It's you know, we, as people have been involved in this business a long time, you know, you see a lot of things go wrong and you see what can make a good project. So to date, everything that we've seen at BKM indicates this is a very good project.
Yeah, and do you know what? I was looking through your one of your presentations, and I looked at the aerial photograph of BK, the zone there, and the drill holes are in BKM, Maine. Now, I suppose, have you touched? Because there's, I mean, looking at this area, it says copper sol images and drill holes, and the copper sol image of BK West, it looks huge, and you know, the other zones, and this is just one part of that area, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, Justin. So, you know, this is, you know, the KSK contractor work is essentially what we would call a mineral district. So there's lots of different mineral showings throughout that tenement block in Kalimantan. There's gold, there's polymetallic, zinc, copper, silver, gold, and there's pure copper, copper, silver. We are currently focused in on, as you say, the BKM. We've just come through a very, you know, prolonged down cycle in commodities, and we're only just coming off the bottom of that prolonged down cycle. So it's been, you know, it's been a challenging period for any companies, let alone a, you know, small development company. We've really focused in on what we believed was the best opportunity to get up and running, get a project built, get it into production, generating cash flow. And then from that, we can then start to look at all the other options and opportunities that we have around BKM and on the rest of the block. You mentioned BK West. We have BK South as well. We've already put 6 holes into BK South. Every one of those holes has got the same, you know, tenor of mineralization, shallow as BKM, the main deposit that we're currently drilling, and BK West doesn't even have a hole in it yet. So we're very confident that that current 8-year mine life that we've, you know, that we've got based on the preliminary economic assessment and that we're currently undertaking the feasibility on, will grow, you know, by 3, 4, 5 years once we start to do that additional work. We don't necessarily need to do that work now. We will do a little bit of work probably, you know, early in the next new year to sort of, I guess, flesh that out a little bit more and, you know, show that it's these are actually real targets. But as I said, BK, you know, BK South has already proven, you know, to be very similar to BKM, and we'll get some holes into BK West and some of the other things nearby. So, yeah, look, once we get this project up and running, I've no doubt that it'll go for a lot longer than 8 years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's talk about the copper price a bit, because I know that the PEA is modelled on, what, 325, I think, and 350 and 375. And we've seen, I mean, I think a stat I saw was phenomenal the other day. It said the copper's winning streak over 14 days it was risen for, and that was the best in 28 days. That movement suggests to me that it was oversold, you know, and now we've seen the bottom. And obviously we won't climb straight up back to above $3. But, I mean, it seems to me like now we've seen a definite bottom. Is that what you're thinking? Is that what you sense, Tony?
Oh yeah, look, you haven't seen anything yet, Justin. When it goes, it's going to go very strongly.
Yeah.
You know, look, I think you sort of picked it in one. I mean, if you look at the copper market, it's basically been in a trading range for most of this year between around $2 and sort of $2.20 mark, occasionally a little bit higher, but not much. That to me has been a very clear indication that we were sort of trawling on the bottom and the market was in balance. And the market, by saying the market is in balance, the supply and demand were pretty much the same, so the price wasn't moving either up or down very much. You've seen what's happened with coal. It's gone from essentially $90 coking coal to $300. Thermal coal has gone from $50 to $110. And those markets were very similar to the copper market not very long ago. They were trawling along the bottom in balance, and then it took a little supply disruption, coupled with some regulatory changes in China, and, you know, the commodity, you know, the demand side is still very strong. So we've seen an incredible spike up in coal prices. I don't expect it to stay there for a long term, but it shows you what can happen when a market is in balance, particularly when it's a big market, Justin. So coal's a very big market, iron ore's a very big market, and copper is the largest of the base metals market. It's a 22 million ton market. It's a huge market. So any restrictions on supply side, I think, you know, we're going to see the copper price really start to move up. It's moved up recently, as you say, had a bit of a good winning streak on the back of sort of improving sentiment in terms of the global infrastructure build. Plus also, as you know, you know, there's a lot of copper consumption going into, you know, infotech and green energy. So, you know, I think, you know, we've moved out of that trading range. We're now up around the 250 mark. I think we've been to 270, but, you know, it's only just getting started. And, you know, anyone who questioned our use of 325 in the PEA last year or early this year, it's not very far away already.
Yeah, and do you know what? A bit of clarity. I was writing a blog post actually on Asia Met, and I wanted to study just, you know, the reports out, recent reports on copper. And one thing that came to me is that the grades are degrading, aren't they? They're getting worse as time goes on. So what this means is the cost goes up for producers. And like I said, having a, like you said, a low strip, low cost, you know, project is very important, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. So, you know, just on the, to pick up on the point that you just made, Justin, I mean, the average grade of, you know, operating mines, the average grade of production worldwide over the past 15 years, 20 years, has come down from about 0.95% copper to around about 0.6% copper now, 0.56, I think it is. So, you know, if you just think about that, you know, if you're running an operation and your grade is dropped by 40%, then you've got to put 40% more material through that plant to actually generate the same amount of copper that you were before. So a lot of the capital that's being spent in copper was going into just maintaining existing supply. And, you know, with the, you know, the sharp downturn in commodities or the long down cycle that we've talked about, there's been very little new capital investment going into new supply. So, you know, the fundamentals are set for copper to, you know, when the demand side picks up, which it's starting to, and when this, you know, any little hiccup on the supply side, you know, I think you'll see the copper market rebound very strongly. So, you know, having a project like BKM, you know, we've got, you know, around 0.65, 0.7% copper. It essentially starts at surface. We, you know, we only have to mine 1 ton of waste per ton of ore. So the strip ratio is 1:1, which is very low. Just in comparison, you know, most mining operations in base metals open cuts are probably running 3, 4, 5:1, and gold mines will be running anything up to, you know, 10, 12, 14:1. So, you know, having a 1:1 strip is exceptionally good. Good, you know, good solid grades near surface, good continuity. The ability to heap leach the copper because it's the mineralogy is suitable for heap leaching. So, you know, that's a low cost extraction process, and we'll be producing copper metal on site. So it reduces the bulk, reduces the volume you have to transport, and you get the full value for your product. You're not sending it away to a smelter and refiner to finish it off. So, you know, all in all, the fundamentals of this project are extremely good. You know, great, just the physical parameters, the chemical parameters, as I said earlier, you know, everything sort of works in your favour. Transport and logistics are good, well known, and you know, we're very comfortable operating in that environment up there in Indonesia, which we've done for many, many years.
Yeah, well, you mentioned, you know, BK on its own there is an excellent project, and you know, well, it'll give you amazing returns. But you've also got these, I mean, you know, Asia Met is valued on that at the moment, pretty much undervalued on that. But yet you've got Bootong and you've got Jelai. So and a lot of investors I see out there almost concerned about this conversion of these licenses. And they always, you know, so we might as well mention those, even though, like I said, BK on its own is an excellent project. So what is happening? Any updates on the Bootong and Jelai? I mean, is still things still going ahead? Any hiccups in the way or what's happening?
Yeah, I'm glad you raised that, Justin. It is tends to be a point that people who are looking for negatives might focus on. Firstly, I just want to make it very clear that the project that we're working on now, BKM, has all the permits that it currently needs at this time. There's no additional permits required. It's on a contract of work, and We have all the permits, you know, we need now to complete the feasibility study, finance the project, and then at that particular point in time, we'll need to get a, you know, construction permit and, you know, some other permits that, that we need to build and operate the mine. And that's no different to any other jurisdiction globally. In respect of July and Bouton, July, in terms of its processing, is a little bit behind Bouton. As I said last time, we've now put all the documentation into the government. We've been through our Q&A. We've provided all the additional bits and pieces that they need. We've recently had a couple of additional meetings to follow up to see where things are at. One of the key things, and I think I mentioned this to you previously, that there was, you know, there's been quite a lot of turnover in respect of the minister has changed two or three times over the past 12 months, and likewise, you know, the bureaucracy that works underneath him, in terms of the directors and their support staff, you know, has subsequently really been like, you know, most places in the world. When you don't have a leader, you tend, you know, things tend to go pretty slowly. So, unfortunately, we've been a little bit caught up in that, but we've been reassured that, you know, by the director as recently as last week, that they've got everything they need, and they need to just go through their internal processes now, and they'll get those things to us fairly soon. As I said, Bouton likely to come earlier than July. So, no, I've been consistent with that all through, Justin, and you know, I'm still, you know, very confident we'll get our licenses and we'll get them soon. It's just these things do take time. They're, you know, they're very significant milestones. You know, the issuance of a mining license or a production license in any country jurisdiction, and they just take time and patience is required.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and final thing here. I know you've been on your travels, meeting people on the corporate side. How are things going there?
Yeah, no, very well, Justin. You know, we've just been talking about copper and where we are. And, yeah, one of the things that I've found quite interesting probably in the last maybe 2-3 months. So, as you know, I was in London a few weeks ago and, you know, we met up with, a group of, you know, our retail shareholders, but also we got around and seen some of the generalist funds and some of the specialist resources funds. And I think it's fair to say that there's been a fundamental shift in people's thinking towards copper, in that previously they were always looking at copper was coming down and they were just sitting on the sidelines thinking, well, copper's going to continue to fall. Why would I get involved with it now? Now the mindset has changed really completely. They've seen it trawling along the bottom, the price, as I said, in that range, 2 to 220 for most of the year. And now they're thinking about copper going up, not copper going down any further. So looking to find investment opportunities that they can get themselves set in. And, you know, we've been around, as I said, to see a number of those. And they've all said, we like the project a lot. We know you guys, we know what you're capable of. And we're very interested and, you know, looking forward to the completion of the feasibility study for the funding component of the project. So very positive feedback there. The second bit really, as you know, as listeners may know, I've spent quite a bit of time in China recently. That's on two or three different fronts. So one is looking at engineering, procurement, construction contractors to actually build, you know, do the engineering and build on the project, on the processing plant predominantly, and also to bring funding with that package. So the Chinese run a model which is EPC, engineering, procurement, construction, and funding. So talking to several groups there, and you know, we're advancing you know, quite a long way with a couple of groups there. I'm not necessarily saying that we will use them at the end of the day, but you know, we're going to run it. We're running a number of different horses to really determine what's the best way to take the project, you know, through the funding exercise, through construction and into operations, well, you know, ultimately what's best for the shareholders. And then we also have a group of corporates who are interested in investing in the project, both BKM and Bootong. Some are interested only in Bootong, some are interested in both. It really depends on, you know, the modus operandi of the company and what they're interested in. So, you know, the one of the things that's really changed, if I just might touch on it, Justin, you know, in respect of China over the past 12 months, is that we saw very little activity out of China in the resources sector for the last 2 or 3 years, other than them acquiring some operating assets. But what we're seeing now, and it's a lot of it's driven by this One Belt, One Road strategy. Listeners may not have heard too much about it, but it's very much front and centre in China. It's part of the five-year plan. It's essentially the recreation of the Silk Road, both overland and maritime. And alongside that, China set up the Asian Infrastructure Development Bank. There's a whole lot of countries, including Australia, have contributed into that fund, and that money is being utilised to build out infrastructure throughout Central Asia, up into Russia, pipelines, roads, and maritime ports, etc. So it's effectively linking, you know, China with Central Asia, Southeast Asia, and Europe. And that's a very major government-driven, stimulus. So what we're seeing is Indonesia is a big part of that. So there's a lot of Chinese investment going into infrastructure in Indonesia, and you know, off the back of that, we're seeing a whole number of Chinese companies who are now interested in getting involved in the resources sector in Indonesia. So, you know, we've been talking to those. There's some serious interest there. People have done some very detailed work on the company. And, you know, as I said earlier, it's really about getting options on the table for us. You know, I mean, I'm not waiting until the feasibility studies finish next year to think about how we're going to build it and fund it. You know, that starts now. You know, so we're doing a lot of work behind the scenes on getting, you know, options on the table for us when that happens. We're very, you know, we're extremely confident the project's, you know, is going to come through the feasibility with flying colours. So, you know, we've got to prepare for that and you know, just keep the foot on the accelerator and keep the project, you know, pushing forward and get it into production as quickly as we can. So a lot going on there. And then, you know, that's, I guess, that, you know, that level of Chinese interest and just greater interest in resources has sort of, I guess, livened up a few of the Indonesian, you know, large Indonesian conglomerates, and you know, we've had quite a lot of inbound interest from those guys as well. You know, we are talking, you know, we continue to talk. We're always talking to those groups. So again, you know, it's about getting options and getting the best mix for our shareholders.
Marvellous. All right, Tony. Well, listen, one last thing. You are the fourth most followed company on the Vox Markets website of all time. So let's try and get you in the top three here. Give us three reasons why someone should hit the follow button on Asia Met on the Vox Markets website, please.
Well, absolute top quality assets and people, Justin. You can't do, you know, you can't build mines without good projects. So we've got excellent projects there. And as I said, we've got a team who, very experienced team with all the skills, done it all before, who are executing on the plan. So quality resources and team. In terms of, you know, we're extremely undervalued. We are just coming out of the bottom part of the cycle. You know, our valuation's starting to creep up a little bit. The emphasis of the press release today was really to say to people, look, you know, that conversion from inferred resource that I talked about to measured and indicated is, you know, is very significant. You know, many projects fall apart at this particular part of their life cycle, and our project's going from strength to strength. So, you know, these higher confidence level resources, which can be converted to mineral reserves, get a much higher rating in terms of their valuation. So, you know, that's very significant for us. So, you know, we believe we're very undervalued, just purely on BKM at the moment. And, you know, as you know, we've got 3.5 million tonnes of copper in JORC compliant resource you know, sitting behind that at Bootong as a major growth option. So, you know, we've got the assets there to build, you know, a company which could be easily a $1 billion-plus company over time. So, you know, fundamentally very undervalued, quality assets and people, and it's all about timing. I mean, you started off, you know, today talking about where we are and, you know, the institutions and the opportunity for retail investors. Well, this is it. As I've said, you know, I think it's onwards and upwards from here for AsiaMet. Copper price starting to move, projects coming through the feasibility with flying colours, and, you know, I can only see it going one way. And, you know, that's why, you know, I'm continuing to drive it very hard. So, you know, those three major things, Justin, all, you know, very significant and important fundamental reasons for people to get on board now.
Lovely. Thanks very much, Tony. And I look forward to speaking to you again when there's more news out, fella.
Good on you, Justin. Thanks very much. Appreciate your time. Cheers.
The Box Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is full-time proud investor, Wheelie Dealer. You all right, fella?
Yeah, not bad, Justin. How are you?
Yeah, good. It's been an interesting couple of weeks in the markets, hasn't it?
Yeah, I've sort of been almost enjoying it for a change, because it's been quite a frustrating year for me because I've been quite cautious. I haven't really been doing much, you know, just the odd tinkering. And I've sort of feel like I've got back into buying mode and getting a bit more aggressive, which is sort of a bit strange, really.
Yeah, yeah. So last time I know you had shorts. I mean, I don't mean physically short. Yeah. You were in shorts. I mean, you were shorting the FTSE there.
Yeah.
But what has happened with that? Are you still shorting the FTSE?
Well, yeah. I mean, I sort of haven't handled that very well. I mean, to be honest, it's been a bit of a disaster. I mean, if I'm going to be positive about it, in the sense that it stopped me losing money. You know, I basically, my portfolio is pretty much flatlined all year. You know, so it's effectively, it's like moving to cash, but I haven't actually had to sell anything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's how hedging should work. I think in future, I'm going to have to get into using stop losses on it. I think it'd be a much better way of doing it. And I'm sort of, you know, formulating ideas on how I'm going to do it better in the future. Anyway, irrespective of that, that's the history. What's done is done. I managed to close out pretty much all my shorts just the day before the election, yeah, the US election, because obviously I was worried about how that was going to turn out. But we took a bit of a dip before, so I took advantage of the dip to actually get the shorts closed, reducing the size of the hit I would have taken. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I've left a little bit of short on just because I thought, you know, if some shock does happen on, as it did with Trump, then there might be a drop. But funnily enough, it dropped overnight about 5 a.m, and it flipping recovered.
So.
I didn't actually close. But I've got a very small short. I mean, it's probably about 10% of my portfolio, so I'm quite happy to let it run. But anyway, by reducing the shorts, it's like you're buying back. So it's like an enormous buy is what I've sort of done.
Yeah.
And in addition to that, I've been buying a few stocks as well. I've been topping, you know, I topped up on Moss Brothers, MOSB, Galliford Try, GFRD, Esure, which is ESUR, and 32 Red I bought this morning, TTR at 130p.
So you're quite bullish.
It's like we sort of said before we got on the call. I'm sort of getting into these seasonal trends. I mean, November, December tend to be pretty good months.
Yeah.
December is the best month of the year usually. Now, obviously, these trends don't always play out, but I think, you know, you think we've had so much to worry about all year. It's just been nothing but worry with Brexit and the blooming, you know, the president and everything else. There's been so much to worry about. A lot of stocks have got quite beaten up. And I think there's a fair chance, you know, okay, we haven't got much of November left, but maybe in December we can do okay.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, let's just play into that theme. I'm not leveraging into it. I don't want to take on much risk. You know, I'm just buying normal shares, but I'm quite happy to put a little bit more in the market, really.
Yeah, and also, like I said, it's always worth reminding yourself that, you know, and this is hard, because sometimes when we read about indices a lot and all this, and it's clumped together, this, you know, we believe that the stock market is one big stock, when in actual fact, it's a market of stocks,
exactly.
You know, and
yeah,
there are always bargains to be had. There's always good trading updates by certain companies. And, you know, so it's always, you know, worth doing research on individual stocks. Say, well, you know, like certain companies, for example, if you look at EasyJet and Sky, have been massively oversold here. And EasyJet came out with there, and I said they do travel. You know, they rise and fall on rumor. Now, the profits before tax profits down 28%, but they've risen on that because they've been so heavily sold. You know,
the expectations are so low, weren't they? Exactly.
And I see the same with Sky. I mean, I don't see what people are cooking into that. But I mean, they're down now from like 12 quid to below 8 quid. And I'm thinking, well, I'm looking at the trading updates. I don't see it as that bad. I mean, you know, unless it's a one-off you know, nightmare there, I think whatever they report now is pretty much priced in, you know?
And you think how locked in the customers are on Sky. I mean, okay, maybe they're facing a bit more competition from the likes of BT, and you know, obviously Talk have got a TV series, a television capability, and blah, blah, blah. But really, Sky customers are pretty locked in.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been with Sky forever, and I don't even dream of changing because, you know, you're sort of used to it, aren't you? It's what you do. You always use Sky, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah.
You know, I think I can't see the churn being much on a business like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But the other trend that I was going to mention was January to March, you know, quarter one, is historic for house builders doing well. And it seems to be because people get excited because of the sort of spring selling season, you know, we're going towards the summer and whatever. And it's a really well-established trend. It's got incredible reliability, like something like 85% of years it tends to work. And you bear in mind, house builders are pretty beat up at the moment. You know, they're all quite low. So I think, you know, playing that quarter one trend, i.e. buying into house builders now, could work out pretty well.
Yeah. And what are you looking at, any specific house builders?
Well,
which ones?
I bought more GFRD the other day, you know, Galliford Try.
Yeah.
Because actually, there's another sort of twist to this. When is it? Is it next week? Yeah, it must be next Wednesday. We have the budget from the Chancellor. And it's pretty likely he's going to do something on housing and he's going to do something on construction. Now, Galliford Try plays into both those themes because half of what they do is housing, half of what they do is construction. So I thought that was quite a good one. And the other one had an update today, is McCarthy and Stone, MCS, you know, the retirement people.
Yeah.
And really good update today. I like that. I thought it was pretty good. I mean, the only slight negative was that the order book was slightly down on, was smaller than they expected. I think it was down. I think it was actually up, but it was smaller than they expected because they had a slight slowdown just after Brexit. But they say it's all gone back to normal now.
Yeah.
That's a lovely niche. And as they say in the thing, you know, they for 40 years, they've specialised in retirement homes. And no other house builders seem to be able to compete with them in that little space. They've almost got it, like, cleaned up.
Yeah.
Because they manage the assisted living properties going forward and whatever. So I think it's a nice little niche. So, you know, if like me, you're a bit slightly nervous about pure play house builders, you can play things like MCS and GFRD, which are a bit of a sort of twist on the same thing.
Yeah, good call. Yeah, and anything else you've been looking at that's taking your fancy there?
Well, yeah, I mean, one I just must mention quickly. When I last did a course, talked about Devro, you know, DVO, the sausage skins.
And
that's all gone horribly wrong.
Is it?
Oh, mate, nightmare. Because, I mean, the only thing I did well was I only bought 1% of my portfolio in it. You know, so I just sort of dipped a toe in.
Yeah.
I don't normally like buying things after a profit warning, and that's exactly what I did. But I think they're in quite a bit of trouble. I wrote a blog about it, which I put on my website last night. I think they're going to need a rights issue. They're certainly going to have to cut the dividends. Having said that, maybe there will be opportunity, but I don't think people should be buying Devro now. I think it could drift quite a bit lower. But once the rights issue or whatever they're going to, you know, placing whatever it is happens and they get the debt down, I reckon they might rally, because that often seems to happen when you have a rights issue.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, do you know what? When a share price comes down there, and like I said, that's taken into account. there's less risk then, because you know it's taken the hit.
Bad news, isn't it?
The bigger risk is when the share price is rising and strongly. You know, it's more chance of it coming back. So
when you're taking on valuation risk and you're on PE at 28 or something.
So to me now, all of a sudden, now you've said that, it's on my radar. I'm thinking, wow, let's keep an eye on this.
I wouldn't buy. I think it's going to drop a bit more, but watch out. The other one is if the directors change. Market tends to like a change of directors. You know, when there's a shake-up going on, sort of thing. The other one we spoke about was BME.
I've seen these shops, very garish, sort of big sign, B&M. You know, you've seen them around the discount retailer,
That's ghastly. But it's one that sort of I haven't really noticed much before, but I noticed they had results today and they look pretty strong. You know, the growth, what was it, 18% increase in revenue?
Let's have a look. 19% increase in revenue. 20 new stores opened it's including 500th store opened in April. So a massive change. And of course, ex Tesco guy is Sir Terry Leahy is the chairman there.
They got credibility, haven't they? And I think it said like for likes were sort of like fairly flat, so, you know, but really it's about the new stores, and they seem to be generating cash and using the cash to open new shops. And I imagine they're pretty cheap shops to open because they're not going to be like prime high street locations, are they? I thought that was quite an interesting one. And then another one that I hold myself and people who follow the website will know all about this one is IG Index. The spread betting company. That share has dropped so much in the last 2 months or so. It just keeps going drifting down and down and down and down. And it's starting to look like it could be quite a good entry soon. I think it's started to turn up, actually.
Why is it dropping? Is it something to do with Brexit or something? What's going on there?
I just think it's a general malaise. I mean, they'd had a good run up because they got pretty rich. I think they were on a forward PE of around 20. But they've dropped back a bit, and the forward PE is probably about 18 now. But bear in mind, they've got a cash pile, so you could argue the true PE is a bit lower than that. And it's paying a 4% dividend, so I think as a sort of nice income share that's pretty reliable, it could be a good one. Bearing in mind, they're leaders in spread betting, really, and they're hard to touch.
And also, these companies obviously love volatility, and there's been a lot of that recently, so you'd think that would help, you know?
Exactly. I don't really understand it. You know, it's just you seem to drift down and drift down and drift down. So, often shares do that, don't they? And is it noticeable that when you look around a lot of sort of, FTSE 250 kind of stocks and some of the small stuff, a lot of it's really come off its highs. Even though the FTSE 100 is still pretty near the highs, even the FTSE 250, well, America's making new highs and everyone's excited. There's a lot of stocks that are still pretty low, really. You know, they've had quite a pullback.
We're all set for the Santa rally, fella.
Yeah, come on, Santa, bring him on. Well, he usually appears for about 2 days, and he's just after Christmas. So.
It's not long. Just enjoy it. Enjoy
it to save my portfolio.
Enjoy it while it lasts. It's very brief. Cheers, fella. Listen, I'll put those stocks you mentioned on the blog here and a link to your website where people can see exactly what you've been doing. And speak soon, fella.
Yeah, cheers, Justin. Nice one.
Okay, today's suggested one for your watch list is Sirica Energy, SQZ, submitted by Ricky. Thank you, Ricky. What does the company do? Oil and gas company. How many shares does the company have in issue? 263 million. What's current price and market cap? 13.375 pence, 35 million market cap. Revenue, profit, loss. In the interim results for the 6 months ended 30th of September 2016, revenue was $5.7 million. Net loss after tax was $2.8 million. As results impacted by field shut-in. How much cash or debt does the company have? Interim results for the 6 months ended 30th of September. End period cash position was $20.8 million as of 30th of June. Cash at 29th September was $13.1 million after second stage payment to BP and ongoing Erskine costs, but before September sales receipts. List three reasons why people should put this company on their Vox Markets watch list. Number one, projected cash position at the 31st of 3rd, 17 of at least $26 million USD and $170 million tax losses to be offset. Reason two, sub $20 per barrel OPEX. That's Erskine. And the third reason, has other huge assets predicted to drill in 2017. So that's Sirica Energy, SQZ. Please do your own research, and thank you very much, Ricky, for submitting that. And by all means, if you know of a company that you think should be on other people's watch lists, give it the A of publicity. You know, people can do their own research, and then they can hit the follow button on Vox Markets. They'll get RSS straight to the front screen of their phone, if they've got the app, of course, which is free. So just go into one of my blog posts at voxmarkets.co.uk/blog. Click on one of my posts there, and you'll see a link there saying, do you know of a stock that you think should be on people's watch lists? And then click the link there and fill in the form. It takes 5 minutes. All right, here are the top five most followed companies on the Vox Markets website in the last 24 hours. They are at five, SDX Energy. Malky covered those in the podcast yesterday. At four, Jersey Oil and Gas. Malky covered those in the podcast yesterday. JOG, Jog. At three, of course, it wouldn't be a day if this company wasn't in the top five. It's CloudTac, CTAG. At two, it is YOLO Leisure and Technology, YOLO. And at one for the second day on a trot, Angus Energy, ANGS. Of course, they floated yesterday. I do own some stock. They took part in the IPO. And you can read my blog there. If you go to voxmarkets.co.uk, follow that blog. Click on any one of my posts. At the bottom there, you'll see my blog on Angus there and other stocks that I hold, several blogs you can read. And I think that company has potential. They've got cash and potential now. All right, top five most liked RNSs on the Vox Markets website this morning. But listen, do your own research on everything, all right? At four, the fifth most followed. Listen, I've got a cold. It's a man flu. You know, it's a lot worse than anything else anyone's ever experienced. At five, Edenville Energy, EDL, bulk sampling results. At four, EasyJet, final results. At three, Sound Energy, inclusion in the MSCI Small Cap Index. At two, Asia Met Resources, director shareholding. And at one, Asia Met Resources, miscellaneous feasibility study updates, what I chat to in about Tony in the podcast today. So that's it for the podcast. Thank you very much for listening. It's much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.